Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Clayton Christensen's celebrated insights on disruptive innovation describe dynamics that have transformed industry after industry. His book, The Innovator's Dilemma, was a kind of Bible to the 90s internet revolution, which claimed Christensen as hero and sage. Then he got disrupted. Heart attack, cancer, stroke, diabetes, all on his plate in his 50s. Now he's looking hard at healthcare. This hour on Point Survivor, Clay Christensen on disruptive innovation in American healthcare. You can join the conversation. Has a little hospital time given you insights on what might work better than the system we have now? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in the studio is Clayton Christensen. Forbes magazine calls him one of the most influential business theorists of the last 50 years. He's a professor at Harvard Business School, co-founder of the consulting firm InnoSight, a giant in his field and a pretty big man in person at 6'8", author of The Innovator's Dilemma and, more recently, The Innovator's Prescription, a disruptive solution for healthcare. Clay Christensen, it is great to have you here today. Thanks so much for coming in.
Well, my thanks to you, Tom.
It's great to see you upright. I was there in the 90s. I remember very well when these big confabs of Internet revolutionaries would get together, and my gosh, if you were attending, people would practically fall down. You were the kind of guiding light to a whole generation. They thought, and they were disrupting in very profound ways.
They were.
You were right at the heart of that with The Innovator's Dilemma, at the thinking of that time. You're a big guy in your field. You're just plain a big guy. You had dealt with diabetes for a long time. But when we're going to look at what you're prescribing for American healthcare, but just describe to us the sort of parade of horribles that you ran into in your 50s.
It was a surprise to all of us, frankly, Tom. I had played basketball as a college player.
You're a big, robust guy.
Kept in shape, did all of the measures that you would ask. And by every medical measure. I didn't have any of those diseases, but just one by one, out of nowhere, a clot emerged and stopped my heart.
How old were you then, Clay?
I was 55.
Okay, it's not as though you were a stranger to medical issues for several decades, 30 years. You'd had diabetes, you'd learned to just work that into your life and live with it.
Yeah, that's right. And so I tried to rebuild my physical shape after the heart attack, and then cancer came along.
What kind of cancer? How did you discover that you had it?
It was lymphoma, follicular lymphoma.
Okay.
And
is that a difficult kind or an easy kind?
No,
to treat?
if you have to choose one, you should choose this one because it's quite. Tumors emerge, but they are generally withheld, contained within the lymph system.
Which keeps it contained, but these were, you had tumors in big, I mean, you're a big guy, but you had football-sized tumor in there somewhere.
That's right.
More than one.
That's right. And there's no way that I would even have thought to look for those things for a long time, you know, and then it just became painful, and that's how we discovered it.
But that meant chemo and all the rest?
That's right. And, you know, my father died from the same disease.
In his 40s, as I recall, years ago.
And I compared what chemo was that time versus what chemo is like now. And I can't complain. All I could feel is gratefulness that so many people worked so hard to make it so much more effective and easier to deal with.
You say you can't complain. I think a lot of people would. I want to talk about part of what pulled you through in all this. You're, as I read the story of you dealing with these things, your religious faith is no small element here, your Mormon faith, and we'll look at that. But here you are. You've got then the heart attack, the diabetes already, then the cancer and the chemo. That went at your dental work, and you had to have all that. You got a detached retina in the middle of this, and they drained your eyeball and put silicone oil in there or something. I mean, good heavens. And then on top of all that, just last summer, comes a stroke.
That's right. And that has been the hardest one. Because
you're a talker and a teacher, and that went at your speech capacity initially?
That's right. It just destroyed my ability to speak and write.
Wow.
And so I had to buy a copy of Rosetta Stone for English.
As if you were an English as a second language learner almost.
That's right.
Or a way back in.
And we have a 6-year-old granddaughter.
Yeah.
And we would work that together.
And she hold up a picture or something and you'd name it?
Yeah, that's right. And she'd guess me when I was wrong and she just beat the pants off me.
Wow.
But word by word, was able to learn to speak again. And so occasionally you'll see me use the wrong word. You know, things still are
This
are
is
not,
a little thin tail of that stroke.
Yeah, that's right. But that has been the hardest because the others, my role was kind of in a passive patient.
You would be cared for, but here you had to stand up and actively claim back that speech capacity.
That's right, and that has been hard.
Well, I'm sitting here kind of overcome with admiration. That is a lot of blows in a row, and you took them, and you're still standing tall and talking about public issues and teaching and all the rest. You earned the word survivor in a very remarkable way. What did you learn in that healthcare system along the way? You saw a lot of it.
Well, that's a great question, Tom. Let me say just off the cuff that I probably learned 3 important lessons. Mm-hmm. And the first one is the image in my mind is Clay is standing underneath this massive column or a funnel.
Mm-hmm. Clay, and, as in yourself, with all the health issues that you, to your surprise, were bringing to life.
Filled mm-hmm. in that funnel mm-hmm. are tens of thousands of people who've actually spent the world's best intellect and their personal lives mm-hmm. to solve the problems that Clay faced.
And that funnel is the American healthcare system?
That's right.
Okay.
And sitting at the bottom of that funnel, it feels like all of their energy was focused on Clayton Christensen.
That sounds pretty comforting. And yet you have written that our healthcare system is itself a kind of a terminal disease for this country.
Yeah, that's right. So what I saw
is... But start with the admiration.
Yeah,
for the...
So I see in that funnel mm-hmm. capability. Mm-hmm. And now we need to think through... There are people to the left and the right of me who are standing beneath similar funnels, mm-hmm. but they're shut off mm-hmm. because we haven't addressed the cost of being there. And I'm lucky that I was in a system that could...
You were in a sweet spot where it all came to you, where all the benefits of that healthcare system worked for you.
Yeah.
Others are not in that sweet spot. But even for you, at the same time, you're part of a country that may or may not be able to afford everything that's in that funnel.
That's right. And I'd love to talk about the system that's inside that funnel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first okay. image that I got. The second was at a personal level. You know, Tom, I really have tried to live my life because of my faith. Mm-hmm. I've tried to live my life in a way that I'm spending it helping other people. And for the first time in my life over the last year, as mm-hmm. these problems magnified one upon each other, mm-hmm. I really started to spend my life thinking about my own problems. And as I focused on myself mm-hmm. and my problems...
Mm-hmm. In a woe-is-me way or a practical way or both?
Both,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, sure. Understandably.
As I did that, I became more and more... unhappy
mm-hmm.
and depressed. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in my life, I really confronted head-on depression with all of its problems, you know.
It's fully understandable, but it's that turning around to look at yourself instead of out at the world.
That's right. You know, and I just, you know, should I go back to Harvard mm-hmm. and teach all of those smart people where now they're going to be able to out-talk me rather than me?
Mm-hmm.
doing it to them, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I could just go down to the basement and make furniture.
Without having to speak.
That's right. But mm-hmm. then I realized, you know, God didn't gather us all together and say, all right, you guys who have problems, it's okay if you focus on your problems. Mm-hmm. And you guys who don't have problems, I want you to focus on helping other people. God didn't say that. But rather, he said, I don't care how bad you got it. Mm-hmm. I want you to turn around and find somebody who you can help.
Were you able to do that?
Yeah, and it was such an important insight that there is no happiness in self-centeredness. And as I screwed my head on straight mm-hmm. again mm-hmm. and tried again every day to pray that God would put in my path somebody who I could help with what I had.
Is that part of the reason that you're out talking about health care right now?
That's right, because as I started to focus on helping other people, the happiness returned to my life, the depression disappeared. And that was a very important lesson. I think in one way, why there are so many unhappy people or people whose lives feel empty, mm-hmm. it's because somehow they convince themselves that they've got problems and it's okay to focus on themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's an important part of what I hope I can accomplish in the remaining part of my life, is help people understand the causality of happiness.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with disruptive innovation champion Clayton Christensen about big disruption in his own life and health, and the way forward for the American healthcare system. He has written powerfully and for a long time now about big issues of business theory, The Innovator's Dilemma, his big book, The Innovator's Prescription, his more recent book, about talking about disruptive innovation in the American business world. In his 50s, at the top of his game, he was looking at diabetes, heart attack, cancer, stroke, one after another. Talk about having your nose put right in your subject. It happened with Clay Christensen. Now, in fairness, Clay, you had begun to think about healthcare issues before this cavalcade came down on you. You were already looking at it. I know that your basic premise here is that to look at it in terms of public or private is just the wrong way of approaching healthcare, though those have been the biggest terms of our public debate
yes.
so far.
Yes.
What's the third way that you're thinking of, the disruptive way, perhaps?
There's a good way to visualize it, Tom. So when you go home, get a screwdriver take away the lid mm-hmm. of your Dell computer.
Okay.
And just look inside of it. And you'll see just all of these little components, plucked into mm-hmm. a board.
From different companies and countries and you name it.
That's right. Everyone by a different company. Mm-hmm. It was designed by a different company, manufactured by a different company,
yep.
and so on.
All pulled together to make that Dell that you might be tapping away on.
That's right. And if somebody from each of those companies came into your place mm-hmm. and you said, ladies and gentlemen, we need to rethink the fundamental system of a computer.
Okay.
What could they do? Well, Intel could give you a better processor. Microsoft could give you Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
Seagate could give you more gigabytes on the drive.
Right.
But nobody has the scope to wrap around their arms around the whole thing and rethink fundamentally what it's going to be.
They're all busy making a business, a profit, out of their sliver of
their individual piece. That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
If you took the cover off of your Apple computer mm-hmm. and you looked inside, it's an interdependent architecture, meaning that the design of every component depends upon the design of every other component.
By design.
By design. That's
there's a
right.
There's a master mind or orchestrator here.
That's exactly right, Tom. So if you ask them to think through fundamentally what should a computer be, they can do it because their arms are around the whole system.
Now, as you say that, and I'm of course, like our listeners, I'm trying to apply that to our healthcare system, and I'm thinking, well, the Mac, the single orchestrator, I mean, you start thinking single payer right away, or government, but you're saying it's not that simple.
No, that's right. It's from a managerial point of view, how we add cost here in order to save a whole lot more cost there? How to improve that part of the system by changing a component in a very different part of the architecture.
So take it out of the metaphor then to the system as we experience it or see it in most of the country now.
Yeah. So probably 85% of all Americans are served by the health equivalent of a Dell computer. And so the hospitals are owned independently, managed independently, and they can figure out how to utilize their operating suites more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And Dell, Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
The surgery rooms, you mean by that, operating suite, whatever.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the insurance companies can process paperwork more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctors can somehow do a better job as individual entrepreneurs in their practice.
Do a better job, whatever that means, whether it's the quality of their care or the profit that they take.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask that group, could you please rethink the system?
Mm-hmm.
They can't do it.
Isn't that what Paul Ryan is kind of asking here? He's saying, let's lean more toward the private. Let's, not make it public, make it private, and let market dynamics bring us a more competitive, efficient system.
That won't work, Tom. And the reason why is if you and I are going to interact with each other,
yes.
Tom, at an arm's length as a market
director,
I need to be able to specify exactly what you have to do and how you have to do it so that I can understand what it's going to be and how it interfaces with my piece of the system.
Okay.
But if I can't specify what you have to deliver to me, in other words, there are interdependencies, then a system doesn't work. And so there's actually about 15% of America that are being served by a system as opposed to a modular world.
A system more on the order of your Apple computer, your Mac.
That's right.
And people like whom? Who?
Kaiser Permanente in California.
On the West Coast.
Geisinger.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Intermountain in Utah.
Okay.
And if I come outside of America, the Canadian system is like a Dell computer. Even though the government pays for everything, from a managerial point of view,
the
hospitals,
siloed.
That's right, exactly like ours. And so you can't change this because you have to change that.
So the 15% of Americans in these more integrated systems, these are systems that where everything is of a piece. Everything is designed to work together.
That's right. And I would call those a health system because they make their money by keeping people healthy. In the 85% Dell kind of a system, I call a sick system because they make money when people are sick.
And so if Kaiser Permanente is going to take care of me, they're better off if I stay healthy. If I just show up at a hospital door, they're better off doing surgery on me and collecting the insurance.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tom. So as a good example, in Northern California, there's a technology where if I cover the teeth of a child and seal the teeth up, they'll never get cavities.
Right.
And this technology has been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
It is very widely understood and applicable.
Mm-hmm.
Or effective, known to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
If you crawl inside of Kaiser Permanente, 100% of the children have received this treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they get a cavity, it's a cost to the system. Outside of Kaiser Permanente, only one-third of children have had that applied.
Mm-hmm.
Because outside, a cavity is a revenue opportunity.
Yes, yes. It's a filling to be to be put in.
That's right.
That's money.
And in that world, when Clay gets admitted to a hospital, it's a revenue opportunity.
So what is this? I think we get it. I get what you're describing. I'm sure listeners do too. What does that mean then for the whole country? If we're looking for a new healthcare system for this great big nation of ours, can we somehow all become customers of Kaiser Permanente? Is that enough? Does that do it? And how would that work?
It's a very difficult problem. It truly is a difficult problem. let me say one other thing as a goal.
Yes.
In that if you actually measure quality and cost correctly, those providers that are systemically organized provide much better care at 30% lower cost. It includes the VA and the armed service system.
Yes, yes, okay.
Are interdependent and systemically organized. And what we need to do is pulling in Washington to help us, help the providers that are now in a modular world to move more and more and more towards the integrated model.
Will they do that willingly, or do you have to crowbar them in there? Because, you know, they're used to charging for that surgery and taking that big dollar if they can get it and going off to the races.
Yeah, that's a great question. Tom, I believe they do. They are doing it, and that they will do it. They just don't know how to think about the problem. And that's what I'm trying to bring to them, is an understanding of this is where we have to go. And once they understand that, good managers, and these systems are run by very capable people, they just need to know what to do.
So there's a reorganization that you're suggesting, and it is, in a way, kind of disruptive. But as I read you on this, though, you get more disruptive than that. You want, and I kind of hear this perhaps coming out of your 3 decades of experience as somebody living with diabetes, you want more and more of the healthcare to kind of be pushed out of the hospital or the doctor's office. You want this sort of, I don't know, the pharmacy, the drugstore, even people at home taking care of themselves. That sounds like real disruption. What's that about?
If you ever think that healthcare will become affordable and accessible by expecting our general hospitals to become cheap,
with their funnels of 10,000 people caring for you.
That's right. Or it will become affordable and accessible by expecting our specialist physicians to take pay cuts. It just won't happen. And this is where technology really has to come in play. Because as technology improves, there are two directions for which technology can go. Technology can actually make better care for the few even more effective.
The super fancy MRI or I don't know what.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And most of technology in history has been deployed in that direction. Mm-hmm. The other way to do it is use very sophisticated technology so that lower cost venues of care and lower cost caregivers can do progressively more sophisticated things.
Like what? You seem to be describing healthcare, medicine taking place at my kitchen table almost.
Well, that's a bit of a caricature, but that's the direction it needs to go, Tom. So go back in history.
Okay.
80 years ago, infectious disease accounted for the vast majority of healthcare in America. And you have a cough or a wheeze, and I had the same symptom. And so the doctor would treat both of us with the same solution, and you might respond, and I didn't. You know, it was in a realm that we would call intuitive medicine. You had to have the best caretaker responsible for this because there were no rules. But science
has advanced
a
little bit.
That's right, and so we now, when you present with symptoms, they can detect exactly what's causing this. And knowing exactly what the disease is, they can develop a solution that is predictably effective.
And I don't need to have a super-duper doctor of medicine necessarily delivering it if I can codify or recognize it.
That's exactly. You don't have to go to the hospital. And so we hand it off to physicians that can be done in a doctor's office or home. And we are so much better off because technology-enabled caregivers who are less expensive in venues that are more accessible take care of all of this. And so today, infectious disease accounts for just a tiny blip on the screen because disruptive innovation technology made it able for lower-cost caregivers and lower-cost venues to solve the problem for us.
It's great to have you here. We have a lot of listeners who have lined up to talk with you. Let me begin to bring some in. Columbia, South Carolina, Dean's calling. Dean, you're on the air with Clay Christensen. Thanks very much for calling.
Hi, Clay. Well, thank you for taking my call. We're a federally qualified health center in Columbia, and one of the things that's coming to our mind is the need for self-monitoring. Is that you were talking about just a moment ago about this taking place at the kitchen table? Is the fact of the matter is as providers we often don't have enough information. We're just taking a picture in time, and so if we could just get people to record more information about their lives, we would do better analysis and be able to guide them in ways that they could help. We have a significant problem with obesity and with diabetes in these communities, but the folks just don't have the foggiest idea how to address the issues, especially in poorer communities who don't have access to affordable care.
But if you could spin out that self-monitoring to your patients themselves, maybe that's the beginning of a kind of disruptive innovation that leads to cost savings. Dean, thanks for your call. Clay Christensen, is this in line with what you're thinking?
Well, I hate to make it more complicated.
I'll go for it.
If you wouldn't mind.
You're a professor.
There has to be two things have to be in place for a solution like that to work. And one is, of course, is the technology that brings information to the patient. The other one, though, and he tints mm-hmm. of this, mm-hmm. is that the patients themselves need to want to do it. And the concept that we is a good mm-hmm. a way to visualize that is we do something, we buy something, a service or a product, to get a job done for ourselves. And needing to get the job done is the causal mechanism that causes us to pull stuff like that into our lives. Mm-hmm. Now, about 15% of Americans, when they're well, they want to continue to be healthy. And so they'll...
You would think it'd be 100%.
Yeah, that's
or
right.
Or 15% do something about
15%
it.
15% to keep healthy. Mm-hmm. The other 85% of us, when we're healthy, we actually don't think about health. Mm-hmm. It's when we're sick that everybody wants to be healthy. But when they're healthy, it's just not a high priority. I'm due fine today. Mm-hmm. In all probability, I'll be fine tomorrow.
Is saving our system to do in part with getting people to think all the time about that health goal?
That's right. And so how do we change a fundamental wiring mm-hmm. in our hearts and in our minds? And most of us think a lot more about our pocketbook than our health.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with disruptive innovation champion Clay Christensen about big disruption in his own life and health. We've heard that story. And the way forward for the American health care system in his 50s, up against diabetes, heart attack, cancer, stroke, you name it. Now he's looking at the whole big picture, bringing that analytical mind to this big American challenge. Clay Christensen is author of The Innovator's Dilemma and The Innovator's Prescription. Professor at Harvard Business School, Forbes magazine calls him one of the most influential business theorists of the last 50 years. He's with me in the studio today. We're going to hear in a moment from Congressman George Miller, one of three committee chairmen who wrote and passed President Obama's health care plan. We'll ask him and Clay Christensen about whether or not that might be the vessel for some of these changes, or maybe there's another way. Maybe there's a Paul Ryan way. I want to bring some of our listeners in, if we may. Jeff in Framingham, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air with Clay Christensen.
Thanks. Hi, Tom, and hi Clay Christensen. Paul Ryan is not my idea of an answer to this. I can relate to you, Clay, because I had cancer which was treated by surgery. However, following that, I had five hernia operations, each one which failed.
Oy.
And so I was in the hospital a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, it was repaired by a plastic surgeon. But along the way, a retinal detachment and a number of other things. And what I found in all of this is that is the gratitude that you talk about. That's certainly there. It wasn't my brilliance that kept me alive, but the doctors and nurses who did that.
Mm-hmm.
But that I had Medicare and Medicaid. If I didn't, I would be dead today. It is that system that enabled me to get all the care that I needed. And I, it's similar, and I would like that for everybody of all ages, which would be similar to a national healthcare system. The major thing that I found when I was in hospital and looking at the bills and all of the things, though I didn't pay them, I looked at them, and the cost is the insurance company's paperwork, the millions of dollars it pays out to their CEOs, and the waste that is incurred by the way that they do things. It's like this, because doctors have to ask for more than they'll get because the insurance companies have a rate at which they pay, which is a percentage of what they ask, but they don't pay it.
Right.
This kind of game only makes things more expensive for people, and if this, it's the overall system. As for health, as for the things that you talked about, home health care, personal information, I had a health care agency in San Francisco caring for people with HIV who were below the poverty level because they were, partially because they were IV drug users and had HIV. We did home visits in hotels, street corners, and so on. Our cost per patient was $1,000 a year.
Jeff, you're keen and you're experienced here, and you put some big pieces on the table. Let me bring them to Clay, if I may, because, I mean, this is front and center right now in the national debate. Medicare, Medicaid, Paul Ryan's talking about capping those things. Jeff, on the other side, says, let's go to universal coverage. Where do you come down, Clay, in these? I mean, the Obama plan, and we'll talk with George Miller about it in a moment, but that's supposed to be a vessel toward innovation. What's the structure that you're actually proposing here to take us forward that would be open to the kind of innovation you'd like to see?
The critical insight that we got in this is that whether it's a private pay versus single-payer government-paid system is the wrong way to categorize the world.
Okay.
Let's go to abroad and see what happens. Most of those under a single-payer system are organized like a Dell computer or like America.
As you said, Canada is.
That's right. So administratively, it's a bunch of silos.
Mm-hmm.
And they just like us, mm-hmm. can improve what's going inside the silo.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also those abroad who have single-payer systems that are organized systemically, like Sweden and Finland.
As a whole, more like your Apple computer, all right?
That's right. Or like
What does that let them do? What does that mean? Or like Kaiser?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're in a silo, you actually make money when people come in and use your mm-hmm. first your services, whereas in a systemic world, you try to keep people out of the hospital. And that's the difference. It's a different perspective, and it doesn't matter where the money comes from. It's how you're organized and what the system motivations are.
So do the Obama healthcare reforms come closer to what you're asking for? They talk a lot about innovation in there. We're going to innovate toward cost saving, toward driving down, but you're shaking your head no. Why not?
Well, they did the first of three important things.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is we just want to be sure that given the current system,
mm-hmm.
everybody can access it because
for
somebody
coverage.
Will pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But number two is, my gosh, if all we're going to do is get money from somewhere so that more people can use the existing system,
mm-hmm.
in the end we will go bankrupt
mm-hmm.
and actually very quickly go bankrupt.
Okay.
because what we have to do is rethink the system, as mm-hmm. we've been talking mm-hmm. about. And so that in some ways, the Obama administration at an individual level wants to be sure that everybody some will pay for it for everybody.
That they've got covered, but the overall cost, no. So the innovation, you're saying no.
That's correct. It really doesn't address that at all. And then how to improve the quality also it doesn't address.
Let me get one call. We'll go to George Miller. Sharon, Nashville, Tennessee. Sharon, you're on the air with Clay Christensen.
Hi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question. I actually have two questions, if I may. The first one is, let me say I love the metaphor you're using. And, the systemic part of it, I think, is if we can wrap our arms around it, is going to be an answer to look at it that way. But I've got a concern when, if I can step back into when you were first explaining it and you were talking about the dentist and how, you mm-hmm. know, the cavity is a profit generator.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. When you remove that profit generator, my question is, what do you replace it with? Because my experience is it makes administrators, physicians, very concerned when profit is going to go away from a service they provide. And in changing a system, I know that makes so much sense. That profits will be moved over here and things will be moved over there, and that makes so much.
But the doctors want to make money. Dentists too.
Right, and it's also, you know, that immediate. So it's a short term. It's really a short term fear that our anxiety, I think, that is interrupting the long term benefit, which, much like patients do, I'm anxious, I'll eat rather than I shouldn't because I'm trying to lose weight.
Sharon, forgive me, but if I can pick that one up right there, and I know you've got another, but I'm watching my clock tick down and our time is short here. But forgive me, but let me pick that one up. What about it, Clay? What about medical professionals listening and saying, hey, you know what, Clay, we do make money off those fillings, and you're going to seal up all those teeth and seal up all these other problems and fix them, and where's our meal ticket?
A great way to frame it is go back in the history, as we were talking about, of mm-hmm. how we dealt with infectious disease. And you notice back then, the doctors were actually quite happy to give infectious disease off to the nurses because it enabled the doctors to kind of move ahead and deal with even more complicated problems.
Is that still the dynamic potentially today?
And now it is not mm-hmm. because of the insurance system. They get paid every time something goes wrong and they try to fix it. And therefore, even though a lot of this care is routine and could be done by those with mm-hmm. are less costly, mm-hmm. they want to keep it to themselves because that's the way they make money. And mm-hmm. if we change the insurance system, then the doctors and the dentists will say, oh, my gosh, let me pass the routine off mm-hmm. to lower-cost caregivers so that I can focus my talents on more sophisticated things.
Clay Christensen, stand by, if you would. I want to welcome into our conversation. We'll just get him for a couple of minutes, but we're very glad to have him. Congressman George Miller represents the 7th District in the East Bay of San Francisco, has for a long time. He was one of three committee chairmen who wrote and passed, ultimately, President Obama's health care reforms. He's chairman of the Democratic Policy Committee. Congressman Miller, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Now, here's Clay Christensen, big thinker, thinks about disruptive innovation. The Obama health care reform talks a fair bit about innovation, but you're hearing him saying it's not actually structurally sufficiently open to innovation to solve what we're up against. What do you say to that, Congressman?
Well, I would say to that, and I'm a big fan of Clayton's. My goal in life is to spend more time with him in both his talks and his deep thinking on some of these topics, and I've used his thinking, or tried to, both in the fields I am in education and in healthcare, and I'm very welcome to the disruptors because both of these systems need it. But I think you have to look at where we are and what we've done. We've taken a 100-year-old system and we've transformed it. And is it the Clayton Christensen system? No, not at this point. But I think if you look in this system and you see portions of the system that deal with accountable care organizations, when you see portions of the system that deal with bundled payments and having hospitals and providers rethink how they provide those services, and you look at the independent payment board here that the president referred to in his speech
yesterday,
that's not going to be a question of innovators within the system, because I think the independent payment board is going to drive the innovation, much of which Clayton has written about and spoken about. It's going to drive the rethinking of a bundled payment system, so you get paid for the outcomes and the total treatment of the patient as opposed to each episode where they walk through a hospital
right.
door. And the same thing with accountable care organization. We see in California the deferral of an insurance rate increase on the idea that they will create additional accountable care organizations in Northern California and see if that can help drive down those payments. This is all a beginning. The real trap here down the road will be whether or not Congress, you already see a reaction to the president's speech by bipartisan groups of members in Congress saying they're not going to give more power to the independent payment board, because they know that they have hospitals or they have providers in their areas that want those streams of revenues not to be interrupted, not
yep.
to be disrupted, if
yep.
you will,
yep.
as Clayton yep. points out. So
yep.
this is going to be a political issue. This isn't going to be a healthcare issue as much as it is going to be political, that may or may not be on the merit. I think the point that Clayton makes in his discussions and his writings, and for those of us in public policy, is if you give a very hard look at the healthcare system or at the education system, they are in a perfect position, in fact, to start losing market share to the disruptors. In the area I represent, I think it is 6 out of 10 people who have insurance have it with Kaiser. I know that the visits from other healthcare organizations all across this country to Kaiser to ask them questions about various parts of their system and how they use them and how they mm-hmm. drive them and how they deal with costs. The Veterans Administration is getting more and more inquiries about its IT system and how it tracks patients and prompts patients. And
so maybe there's the pressure and the draw. If I may, let me put just this chunk of it to Clayton Christensen with me here in the studio. You hear Congressman Miller in Washington. He says, look, you've got an independent payment board. They're looking to drive costs down. It's going to drive innovation. They're going to change that looking at paid for outcomes, not just for feet through the door. He sees a beginning here.
I agree. Let me just say, I think George Miller is a good person and a smart person, and I really respect what he has done. And given that it is a political system more than a healthcare system in
or
many
challenge
ways.
Here. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mm-hmm. What they've done is really important within the system as it exists.
But you're the big disruptor. You want to start to blow it up more.
That's right. And so what I worry about is if people say, well, let's unwound what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But rather, they've taken the first step. And now we need to just be really sure that the incentives that they put into place don't ossify the existing system into the silos.
Mm-hmm.
But again, to just move us to the next stage, which truly involves systemic reform.
George Miller, Paul Ryan would say, please get out of it, government. You know, give more of it back to the markets and let them perform that disruption.
I guess I would just disagree. That's the system we've had for 100 years. That's the system that turned out to be incredibly costly for the nation, for families, for businesses. That's the system that businesses and individuals are coming to Congress and saying, this is unsustainable. I can't continue to operate in this system. And so I would say, I think that, once we start to stop the discussions about whether we're going to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act, and we start looking for its implementation and for its improvements, then I think we have a chance for change. I'm not going to be able to, I don't think politically anybody's going to be able to develop that system that Clayton in one fell swoop is talking about. It's just America is an incremental nation. That's good, that's bad. It depends on how you look at it. But I think we've set the table to drive the kind of innovation, the kinds of disruption that Clayton is talking about. Will it happen on that same timetable or not? Clayton's a very big fan of health savings accounts, and that's been an ideological debate. But the fact is, they're in the legislation, they're provided for, and people will have a choice to go there and to make that decision to see if they can if they can improve their health status, where health savings accounts make sense for them and their family, however they want to decide that. But there's many, many provisions in this bill that have been recommended over the past 10 or 15 years to Congress, and Congress rejected them all. Most of them are now in this legislation. The question is, will we be able to exploit them to bring about the kind of innovation, the kind of improvements in quality of our health status, not just health care, the health status of the American people.
Congressman George Miller, chairman of the Democratic Policy Committee there. Our time is up, but we appreciate so much you being with us. Clay Christensen, this seems like the beginning of a conversation. I would love to come back and follow through as this health care debate unfolds, continues to unfold in Washington. We will watch it. We will invite you back to look again. The Innovator's Prescription is the latest book from Clay Christensen. It's good to see you up and looking robust. Thank you for being here.
My thanks to you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.